from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today, I'll find out why the art is coming off the walls at the Indiana State Museum.
Matt Sosi will join us for a look at the Indianapolis Children's Choir.
And I'll find out what the Indianapolis Men's Chorus is up to. Plus, there's our art calendar we call
What do we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Indiana State Museum is so determined to make you a star gift giver, they're willing to take the art right off their walls. Now, seriously, Sharon Gamble invited ISM Communications Director Kathy Moore, Indiana Artisan Project Director Eric Freeman, and Indiana Store Manager Connor Lee in for their shopping advice. Warning, Indiana artisanal foods are consumed during this interview. You can get your own artisanal goodies at the Indiana Store at the Indiana State Museum.
Okay, so we have an exhibition called Off the Walls, and apparently should also be called Out of the Oven or Out of the Kitchen, because not only is there fabulous art available to buy, there's also some great food. But I want to start with Eric. Tell us about Indiana Artisan. What is the concept, and how long has this been going on?
Indiana Artisan was launched last January, January of 08. It's a project from Lieutenant Governor's office. She wanted to use arts as an economic development generator statewide. And so Indiana Artisan was created to identify artisans around the state, and we purposefully use the word artisans because there's sort of two sides of the house. There's an art side and a food side, and artisans sort of bridged those two very different worlds. So we identify artisans who produce high-quality work, from pottery to woodwork to metalsmithing to things like marshmallows and toffee and even beer and wine. It's a juried process. Artisans apply, and a food jury and an art jury reviews their application as well as samples. All of the applicants have to send samples. Especially on the food side, that's important. But
multiple samples.
I have a feeling you have no lack of people who want to help adjudicate the food side.
You know, it is funny. Even the art jury panel, because we usually do the art jury panel 1 week and then the food the second week, even the art jury panel lobbies to be part of the food jury panel the following week, every time. So we've had more than 800 applicants to the program over the last 2 years. We've had five adjudication processes in more than 800 applicants. Of those, 136 have juried into the program. So it's a pretty high bar. Fewer than 20% of the applicants jury in. So it's great stuff. It's really good food. It's really high-quality artisan artwork. With the goal being that the program will help them expand their markets, reach retail possibilities outside of their area. So if you're a woodworker in Evansville, say, and you sell in the greater Evansville, northern Kentucky area, this program is designed to help put you in touch with retailers in Indianapolis and South Bend and Fort Wayne to help expand your market, really expand your business. Like I say, it's economic development.
That's so smart. And was there anything like this before this program started?
Not in Indiana. The conversation's been going on for probably 20 years, and there have been little starts and here and there from a variety of arts groups, and that was really what got Lieutenant Governor Skillman particularly interested in it, to make it a kind of a state-based project, gives it the legs it's never really had before. It's sponsored by four state agencies, the Office of Tourism Development, the Indiana Arts Commission, the Indiana State Department of Agriculture, which sort of covers the food side, and then the Office of Community and Rural Affairs, which funds the program and really encourages me to get out there and, you know, get outside the greater Marion County area and reach artisans all over the state.
Sure, that's what I'm curious about. How do artists find you, or how do you find artists to invite them to submit?
Last year I did a lot of speaking, you know, from Porter, Indiana, up on Lake Michigan, down to, you know, New Albany and a variety of sites along the Ohio River. It's funny, the foodies, and they call themselves that, yeah. And the arties, for lack of a better word, really have good networks. And if you can just reach one potter in Brown County within a week, you will have reached all the potters in the state.
Sure.
It's funny how they talk. And the food network actually is stronger. You just reach one chef somewhere, and before you know it, the phone's ringing off the hook, emails are coming in.
What a great problem.
Oh, it has been. It's just great. It's a project that's, whose time has come, and it was really ready to happen in Indiana.
Is there any kind of a cap, for example, if there's, let's take beer, I'm a microbrewer based in West Lafayette, do I have to be doing business under a certain dollar level to submit?
No, nor do you have to have a minimum number of employees or a maximum number of employees. Mm-hmm. I get that question a lot, too. If I'm a really big company and have 40 employees, Oliver Winery, for example, is part of this program. Probably the without question at the higher end. Then there's a lot of just one and two person shops, easy to picture. But no is the answer to that. Nor is there a limit on potters, say. You know, if one potter joins the program, do we not take any more potters? No, it's all up to the work. As long as the work is high quality, there could be 20 potters. Nor is there a cap on the whole program. Once we hit 500 artisans or whatever, do we stop? No. You know, as long as there's good high quality art and food out there, we'll take the artisan that produces it.
That is so cool. So let's say I've been accepted. I am the company that makes, and Connor Lee has brought some marshmallows, to sample. Let's say I'm the company that makes 240 Degree Suite is their name, and the reason for that is we have a little science lesson in here.
Apparently marshmallows, in order to make them, you have to bubble the mixture at 240 degrees for quite a while. And that's where the name of that company came from.
So let's say I'm that company and I've entered and I'm now certified as part of the Indiana Artisans. And what sorts of advantages are available to me then?
Well, what the program seeks to do is develop a brand around high-quality artisanal products. And so one of the big advantages to the artisans who are in the program is the advantage to leverage that brand. Not only leverage it, but help create it, because it's their work that's really the oomph behind that brand. So you have a brand. You have sort of an endorsement. I don't know that I use that word, but for lack of a better word. You also have an opportunity to sell your work on our website. So if you already have your own website, great. But if you don't, you can use this. And even if you do, you can sell via our website. We have created or helped to fund artisan trails, 8 of them around the state. And so a lot of our focus is trying to help get the artisan's product to market. But the trails focus is to encourage people to travel around the state or travel to Indiana from out of state and basically take the market to the artisan. So, again, using that woodworker in Evansville example, you can go watch him make his chairs or whatever it is he makes and then hopefully buy something from him. And then when you go back home, you can continue to purchase via the web. And we've learned tourism is really going that direction, sort of experience-based tourism, it's called, or place-based tourism, where you want to go and actually meet the person that creates the pot or the marshmallows that you take home.
I actually did buy something online recently from there because it's so fun just to troll through the website,
mm-hmm.
and you can see all the different artisans and what they specialize in. So, you know, if you see one that does watercolors of seasides or something, you can click on it, which takes you to their website often,
right.
And ended up buying something totally
great,
for no reason. Got sucked in.
Well, the holidays are coming, so keep that in mind.
Yeah, there's something for everyone, too. I mean, the price range, I mean, you have, you know, $4 marshmallows all the way up to, you know, very expensive items, so that's one good thing about it.
Well, and the Indiana State Museum has partnered with the Indiana Artisans. So the gift store at the museum, which is now called the Indiana Store, features these artisans kind of on a rotating basis throughout the year. So we always have pottery and handmade scarves and
fabric art, jewelry. Yeah, I mean, you name it, we have it. But the exhibit Off the Walls that closes on February 14th, doesn't feature any of the food items. It is your typical paintings, mm-hmm. fiber art, pottery, that kind of stuff. So.
Jewelry,
mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
It strikes me that this project might be a great way to connect potential patrons with artists they might commission something from as well.
True.
Have you had that happen yet? I realize the program's a little young.
I don't know if anyone's ever reported that, but I think that that relationship is certainly a nice thing because, for instance, this artist that I bought a little watercolor from online, all of a sudden I have a personal relationship with her. She friended me on Facebook. And, you know, I probably will buy things from her, and it turns out she also does jewelry. So, it, you know, there will be more in the future. So it is kind of nice when you have a face that goes along with something that you purchase. It just makes it so much more personal.
I see an academic paper that you three are probably going to collaborate on about bringing back the kind of patronage that was around during the Renaissance with, you know, you were the de' Medici family and you would patronize artists, but using social media, mm-hmm. using modern computers to connect people. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there is something special about knowing the person who made, you've brought some of these 240-degree sweet
She keeps hinting. She wants to taste it.
I did. I brought
You're
triple.
All the way on the other side of the microphone.
Yeah, here you go. I'll pass them over to you. You have triple berry there and chocolate chip. And like I was saying earlier, I mean, there's all kinds of ingredients, organic ingredients that they put into this stuff. That's all, you know, good, but the main thing is the sweet stuff, the sugar, the chocolate chips. They have lemonade, chai spice. They have all kinds of different flavors of marshmallows. These are available in the museum store right now, ready for the holidays. So.
Think about, and I'm sampling the chocolate chip.
Is her mouth stuck in
there?
I can't talk now. It's different than a regular marshmallow,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm picturing some super high-end s'mores made with these
gourmet
marshmallows.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. But when people come to see Off the Walls, okay, so tell me, how does it work? Because, you know, the mental image I get is I come into the exhibit and I say, oh, I'm going to buy that one right there, and you take it down.
You take it down.
Seriously?
With the help of a museum store staff. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We don't want people just
that.
Coming in and grabbing stuff. But, yeah, and I actually brought one piece that is in Off the Walls. This is a piece from Nancy Miller. She's from Marion County. And this is called Flower Vessel. I'll go ahead and let you take a look at this.
Yeah, that's
nice
gorgeous.
Name for a vase.
Yeah. Now, I bet you can't guess. Is that a pottery? What do you think that is?
From here, and I'm looking at it about 3 feet away from me, it looks like something that would be thrown on a potter's wheel.
It is actually a gourd.
Seriously?
Yeah. It is a gourd that has been refinished, repainted, and... Nancy Miller from Marion County, she's very good at this kind of stuff. So yeah.
It's about 7 or 8 inches tall. Since it's radio, we have to describe it to them. And
yeah.
It kind of has a bulbous base that's maybe 4 or 5 inches in diameter. It comes up, has narrows in the neck, and then flares back out and has a kind of a scalloped edge at the top. And it's painted with dianthus, pink and yellow dianthus.
And metallic.
And, yeah, with some almost like gold leaf paint.
Mm-hmm.
The guys are looking at each other going, okay, she's talking girl talk.
Very good.
Well, the other important thing about Off the Walls, besides the fact that it is fun to see things and know that they're all local artisans and you can purchase those things if you're so interested, but they are very affordable. In fact, I think the show, most of the things are under $300.
All of them are under $300. There are a few larger statement pieces that are a little pricey, but for the most part, everything in the exhibit Off the Walls is under $300.
Well, now in the Indiana store, you can buy earrings for $20, you
sure.
know, that are handmade and things like that too. But you know, sometimes art can be $40,000 for something for your wall, but
right.
this is clearly not in that range.
And this gourd, this is $225. Mm-hmm. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But plus, you're patronizing a local artist. You're helping our local economy, which at any time is a good thing, but especially right now, right? You know, it's a good thing in this particular year. The food artisans are not part of the Off the Walls exhibit, but you do have their work in the store.
We have a two-level store within the museum. It's the Indiana Museum Store. The second level is more kids stuff. Your stuffed animals, your typical museum store.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah, dinosaurs, that kind of stuff.
Love the dinosaurs.
But the first floor is kind of more oriented towards adults. You have wonderful Indiana artisan food, objects, fiber art, jewelry, lots of jewelry.
Books, lots of books.
And I can tell you as a guy, I mean, it is really tough to do shopping for, you know.
The women in your life.
The women in my life, my mother, if I have a girlfriend at the time. So it is really hard to do shopping. And I'll tell you,
The art of the matter has been responsible for a marriage, by the way.
Oh,
We linked up people who had known each other 20 years earlier. One of them heard an interview with the other. They looked each other up, and they got married last summer. So I'm just saying. Be careful what you say on the air.
I'm really worried.
She's packing marshmallows.
Yeah.
Well, the museum store also just got a shipment this week of the famous leg lamp for Christmas from the Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Connor, I'm going to give you a little advice. If you have a prospective girlfriend at the holidays, do not get her the leg lamp.
Don't get the leg lamp, no.
Go earrings,
right?
Sharon Gamble with gourmet marshmallows. And with Indiana State Museum Communications Director Kathy Moore, Indiana Artisan Project Director Eric Freeman, and Indiana Store Manager Connor Lee. Off the Walls continues through January 31st. You can visit the Indiana Store without purchasing museum admission. More information is at indianamuseum.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Indianapolis Children's Choir has two major events coming up the weekend of December 18th. One is called Celebrate the Season, and the other is Angels Sing, with a special guest artist. Matthew Sosi spoke with choral director Ruth Dwyer and executive director Don Steffi about the two holiday events, how one gets into the ICC, and the phone calls and walk-ins they receive.
Ruth, Don, I want to start with a very serious question, and I know this is public radio. What do you guys think of Glee?
Have you even seen it, Don?
Ruth, I'll let you handle that question.
I saw it for the first time last night.
And?
And I was entertained for the last 5 minutes that I caught.
Oh, I
did
see.
Not see the whole thing. I think that television recently has really actually enhanced Americans' idea of what our cultural music is. And shows like that, even though it might not be my style of singing and my style of working with children, shows like that and Dances with the Stars and Idols has brought back to America that we are a singing country and we are a musical country. We are a dancing country, and we forgot that for a long time. So actually, though I don't know a whole lot about Glee, I'm all for anything that gets kids out there singing and wanting to sing more.
See, seriously, that's why I asked. I want to, before we get to the events, I was curious about how does one get into the ICC?
There are several different ways one
yes.
can get into ICC. The vast majority of our children are recommended by their school music teacher. Without the school music teachers, we would practically be nothing. They are our support system. We have a very good relationship with them. Those teachers generally recommend children to come to our summer camp, which is in June. And information can be found online very easily about Choral Festival is what the summer camp is called. They can also just call the office and make an appointment. Now is the time to do that. They can call 940-9640 and say, I'd like to have an audition with the Indianapolis Children's Choir. We'll make an appointment with them. Takes about 15 minutes just to see that their voice is healthy and that they sing in tune.
Does the office get a lot of, I'm kidding when I say Ethel Merman dragging the kid child in and say, listen to my kids.
You.
Or Rosalind Russell, depending on your show preferences.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so not
sure.
Sit down.
Sure, we have parents who bring their children in, and we have parents who call and teachers who call, and actually children themselves who call.
Really?
That take responsibility and say, what do I have to do to get in that choir I just saw on TV?
Who's the youngest one that's ever called the office? Do you have a record of
this? I've probably had an 8 or 9 year old call me.
Really?
Sure. Yeah.
Did they make it?
Well, you have to be at least 9 years old and in the fourth grade to be in the audition choirs. But we have lots of choirs for younger children who they're non-threatening. You don't audition. It's the performance choirs. You have to be fourth grade and up.
Did I read this right? 14 different divisions?
14 different choirs.
Choirs, I'm sorry.
Much fewer divisions, right. We have an early childhood division, children's choir division,
single
and
A.
youth chorale.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, and then say it again.
Early childhood, mm-hmm. which would be infancy through third grade. Then we have the children's choir division, which are fourth graders through our ninth graders, and those are the choirs you see most often out in public singing. And then we have our high school division, which is the Indianapolis Youth Chorale.
Okay. Now, as far as the two events that are happening in December, mm-hmm. who is doing them, and what are you folks doing?
Well, our really, truly, our big main event is the Angels Sing, and we're...
It's, you got two shows for that one. So.
Two shows for that one, and those are our most advanced choirs, and we are more than thrilled. I mean, I get cold chill bumps right now thinking about that Angela Brown is going to sing with us. And Angela Brown is a native of Indianapolis
oh, yes.
and the premier soprano at this moment in time, and we are just so excited that she's joining us for Angels Sing. And then also our advanced high school choir and our intermediate and beginning level choirs do a wonderful, wonderful afternoon performance. Is that correct, Don?
Yes.
Afternoon.
Afternoon.
Celebrate the season. And that performance is just full, packed of every kind of music you can imagine and great kids learning great music and doing wonderful things.
No, I was a little concerned when I saw three performances in 2 days, but mm-hmm. it's going to be different choirs, correct?
Right. The two Angels Sing performances are the same choirs.
Right.
And then the Celebrate the Seasons are the choirs, the regional choirs coming from out and around, and our high school chorus. And those choirs are really, really coming a long way and building their repertoire and going to have some exciting energy mm-hmm. for a Sunday afternoon.
I think what's interesting for the Celebrate the Season, the afternoon concert, is because we infuse the Indianapolis Youth Chorale to add that maturity to the concert, you not only visually, but of course with the hearing them singing, the progression of these young voices, they're physically in front of you getting older, and then the sound as they're singing, and it just shows that growth of where these little voices can grow to, and then when the Indianapolis Youth Chorale sings, it's the pinnacle, if you will.
Absolutely.
As a male, I ask, what happens when voices change?
Well,
how is that handled?
That's handled very delicately in the Indianapolis Children's Choir.
We appreciate that.
We actually say you don't change your voice, you add a new voice.
Ah.
Because A young man can actually keep his high voice, his falsetto, as most people hear it, but we call it, it's really a head voice is what it is, and he just adds his new voice to it. So our young men will continue to sing through junior high and middle school, and we help them develop that new voice for the high school. When they get into the youth chorale, then they're singing baritone and tenor, and they're very comfortable. But even our baritone and tenors and basses will say, I'll sing alto on this, mm-hmm. I'll sing soprano on this, because we've trained them to keep both the old voices, the new one voice comes in.
Now, how are the songs selected for these two events? I guess what I'm asking is, do you pick songs that fit the choir, or do you have the choir fit into the songs? If that makes any sense.
I think that makes sense. Okay. I think what we do is we start with our theme, and our theme is the tapestry of song. When you think of tapestry...
Carole King.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what I think of, for real.
Okay, sorry.
But same idea. You think about that. What is a tapestry hanging on a wall in a cathedral or a castle or someplace like that? It adds warmth. If it has silk in it, it reflects light in that space because those silk fibers will reflect light. It will add texture and all those things and color to the atmosphere of the room. And our theme being a tapestry of song, that's what our voices do. Because our children are ages 9 through 18, you're going to hear a rich, warm tone. You're going to hear bright tones. You're going to hear all sorts of kind of flavors of music. Our tapestry also includes not only holiday traditional Christmas music and spirituals, but music from the Hebrew culture and just general winter music. So our tapestry is every flavor, every kind, anything from folk music and jazz to traditional carols. So when we go to sit down and choose the music, we look at that theme. Then we look at the age of the child and what are you capable of singing or the ability of the child. Then we add to it a brass quintet, I believe we have this year, and Angela Brown. And each of those, as we say, well, now we're going to add brass quintet. Now we're going to add Angela Brown. That changes our tapestry of sound and brings us to this really multicultural, beautiful colored music for both of these performances. All of these elements will be a part of it.
December gumbo.
Right. You got it.
Now, with Angela, speaking of non-threatening choir, what is she going to be performing? And how are the kids, have the kids met her yet? And how are they going to not freak out on stage, I guess?
Right, yeah. Well, they won't freak out. Our kids are very used to working with many different people, and but we're very excited, and they're very pumped for it, trust me, because this is a highlight, and it's real to have Angela Brown with us. They won't meet her, actually, until the week of the performance.
Ah.
So we prepare all the music, and we arrive at dress rehearsal, and that's when they'll meet Angela Brown. Our most advanced choirs in the Children's Choir Division, with our founder, Henry Leck, an artistic director, will actually sing 3 or 4 songs with her. But the entire group of 500 singers at Angel Sing will sing the finale with Angela Brown, which will be spirituals, and where our big finale will be Angela Brown singing O Holy Night with the children's choir. So that's going to be pretty amazing. It's going to be a great sound.
Wow, 500 plus Angela.
You got it.
You're re-cinching the roof, I hope.
Yeah, well, they better be.
So for ticket information, where can they go?
I'm going to defer that to John.
Defer away. Of course, one of the easiest ways people can go is to our wonderful website, which is iccchoir.org, very simply, iccchoir.org, and buy tickets. You can certainly call the office at 940-9640. That's 940-9640. And we'll take your ticket orders immediately. I would say that, indeed, these particular set of holiday concerts are going to go so briskly. So I would call just ASAP to the office. But those are our primary ways to buy tickets.
Now, if they call or go online, they can also find out about the rest of the season. What is the rest of the season for the ICC?
They can find out about the rest of the season. And after the holidays go by, our next big major concert for the public is not until April. It's April the 11th, which will be at the Hilbert Circle Theater. One joy, and I'll get into the rest of the concerts, is that I kind of look at the Indianapolis Children's Choir as a carousel of venues, which really is an added bonus as a ticket buyer, and especially as a subscriber, those that subscribe to our season, because we perform in a different beautiful venue for each of our concerts. Mm-hmm. So we're at the Hilbert Circle Theater April 11th for what we call Voices of Youth, a really rich concert, which is almost aligned with the beauty of that theater. Then in May, we have two concerts, one on the 15th called Hear Our Song. Again, that one is a little more the advanced choirs down at the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center. And then we have Spring Celebration out at Pike Performing Arts Center, May 16th, which is, again, more of the nurturing choirs, our younger choirs, infused with a little of the older choirs. And then this gigantic choral festival concert. There is this summer camp that Ruth is talking about, typically 300 to 400 kids, newbies who are coming along. We add to that another 500, 600, 700 of the Indianapolis Children's Choirs for our finale concert at Clues Memorial Hall. That's June the 19th. It's a matinee. And what is visually striking, not only the sound that just takes you away, at the end of this concert, both Ruth and our founder, artistic director Henry Leck, are conducting all of these children at once.
Matthew Soce with Indianapolis Children's Choir Director Ruth Dwyer and Executive Director Don Steffi. The ICC recently participated in a charity album called Amani Celebration 2, which was produced by the ICC founder and artistic director Henry Leck. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
I am making a list over here, and I am checking it twice. You know why?
Are you going to find out who's naughty and nice?
That's exactly right. And also, I'm making out my gift-giving list over here.
Good for you. Well, my stockings are hung by the chimney with care.
In the hopes that arts calendar soon will be there.
That's right. That one that we call.
What will we do? What will you do? What do you have?
Giving the gift of arts this holiday season.
I love that.
Always a great thing, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's going to a show or buying some artwork or, mm-hmm. you know, and especially it's a fun thing to do, you know, before the holidays, to take your family out to see a show. One thing worth checking out this weekend, Stephen Stolen, who's on WFYI, the great tenor, is presenting his songs for the holidays this Sunday, the 6th at 4 p.m., and the title of it is Finally. Stephen sings the holiday songs we love to hear, and it's a concert that starts at 4 o'clock at Trinity Episcopal up on 33rd and Meridian, and definitely should be a lot of fun. He always does a great job
with those
songs. That's
a great series. Very charming. Hey, if you have foodies and what do you call somebody who's enthusiastic about beverages? Drinkies? There's not a word for that,
well,
I don't
call
think.
Them winos. Well, so,
we need to coin it here on our own little splendid table. But also people who appreciate photography, I have one-stop shopping for you.
Okay.
Where you're going is the Mass Ave Wine Shop, which is in the what is called the East End Shops. Mm-hmm. That's Massachusetts Avenue east of College in downtown Indy. 878 Mass Ave is the exact address. And I'm going to send you there for a couple or maybe three reasons. Number one, they do have food and beverage. That would be one and two,
I guess, if
I'm counting. But number three, they also have a regular display of art, usually by Indiana artists. And right now they have a show up by Kendall Miller, who is based in Dillsboro, Indiana, who does amazing photography and kind of specializes in rural scenes. So she has some beautiful photos of rural Indiana, rural Kentucky, rural Ohio. And it's for sale. So go there and see what you can find for the foodie, the drinky, or the arty on your list.
And when you're down on that end of Mass Avenue, Greg Lucas Gallery, the G.C. Lucas Gallery, is actually, unfortunately, only open for one more month.
Mm-hmm.
He is closing after the holidays, but it's a great time to go look at the new shows that he has and the beautiful work that he has.
Absolutely.
Up on his wall, and you can still, of course, buy work for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Another place, in fact, you can get work for the holidays is at the Eddington Gallery, which is located at Midland Arts and Antiques. In fact, they just had an opening this weekend for First Friday. And then next Thursday, they're having a holiday party, and they're featuring about 17 different artists. This is the Talene Eddington has put together, and sort of a new gallery to check out at Midland Arts and Antiques, which is over there on Michigan.
You know, I have something that you can do that helps you check people off your gift list, but also supports a great cause, a cause very dear to your heart, Travis. And what this is a couple of events that our listeners can go to shop for gifts and books, and the events benefit Indy Reads. First of all, there's the Black and White and Red All Over show, which opens on Friday night, or opened last night if you're hearing us on Saturday afternoon. But the show is up for several weeks.
Great show at the Harrison.
Yeah, great show at the Harrison. You can also shop at the First Congregational United Church of Christ's Alternative Holiday Market. That's on Saturday, December 5th. And you can shop at Global Gifts on Tuesday, December 8th. And each of these programs works a little differently, but all of them benefit Indy Read, so you can do two great things at once.
There you go.
Easy for me to say.
And if you're looking for an opportunity to sit on Rowdy Claus's lap, well, let me give you the time for this. That's right. I said Rowdy Claus.
I'm guessing Rowdy Claus is at the alternative holiday market.
This is Rowdy Claus from the Indian.
Rowdy the Indian?
Yes. Rowdy Claus is having an Indianapolis Indians Christmas on Saturday the 12th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Victory Field. And admission's free, but if you bring a canned good that they'll donate to Wheeler Mission, then you can get your photo with Rowdy Claus and a Rowdy activity book and all types of arts and crafts activities and prizes and stuff.
Is this outside?
It's inside.
Oh.
Yeah, but at Victory Field.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Indianapolis Men's Chorus wants to take you on a trip in the Wayback Machine, all the way to the era of madrigal dinners and Christmas feasts. Their holiday concert is called Masters in This Hall, and Sharon Gamble invited Rex Camp, board chair of Indy Choruses, and Alan Alder, conductor, in to tell us more about this concert and the 20th anniversary season. No figgy pudding was consumed during this interview.
So, Rex, you and I might be the only ones in this room who are old enough to remember Crossroads Performing Arts.
Ah, yes.
And it's been, is it 20 years? Is that possible?
It indeed is very possible.
Yikes.
20 years ago, the Indianapolis Men's Chorus kicked off Crossroads Performing Arts on the Circle with a concert performance.
And we should explain the name, Crossroads.
Crossroads Performing Arts was selected as our corporate name, and we have been doing business as Indy Choruses, the host of both the Indianapolis Men's Chorus and the Indianapolis Women's Chorus since then.
And back in those days, a long time ago, part of the mission was to build bridges between and among gay and lesbian communities and straight communities and all communities. Is that still part of the mission?
That's absolutely the mission, and in fact, our board of directors last spring really reinvigorated our mission statement to really focus on a transformation of our community to make it more accepting and more understanding of our community through excellence in musical performance.
Cool, because music is something that anybody of any orientation or plumbing can relate to. It's all plumbing is one of the truisms, right? It doesn't matter what your plumbing is.
That's right.
Music crosses all those bounds. And I know this is hard for some of our listeners who maybe haven't lived here this long or are too young to remember, but there was a time when people didn't come downtown very often. So that was part also of the early mission, to get people to come to downtown venues.
That's absolutely right. And we're excited this year, the 20th season, to be returning to downtown Indianapolis with concerts both at Unity of Indianapolis, where the Women's Chorus sang in October and where the Men's Chorus will be singing in March, as well as performances at the Athenaeum.
Very good. The 20th season for the men started with the Spooftacular concert.
a great fun concert at the Athenaeum, and we were just very thrilled with the audience response. It was an exciting, fun concert, very accessible, and Alan did a great job in designing the program, and it was great fun for the men and great fun for the audience.
Alan, how did you get involved in choral conducting in the first place?
Well, I started out in my undergraduate years as wanting to be a band director.
Really?
And yes.
That's a career change.
Yes, it was. I acquired a church choir to earn money to help support my, getting through school.
Sure.
and things like that.
Where
and,
was that?
At Indiana State University in Terre Haute, Indiana. Mm-hmm. And partway through that experience, I felt like I needed to learn more about how to go about actually conducting choral music. And so I connected with the choral conductor there, started singing in his church choir, and I was hooked and changed my major, and I have been a choral person ever since.
Oh, wow. So left all the bands behind, huh?
Yeah, I get in front of a band every now and then still, or with collaborative things and such, but mostly choral music.
Do you remember the first time you heard the Indianapolis Men's Chorus?
The first time I ever heard the Indianapolis Men's Chorus was probably in 1992. I believe it was their holiday concert.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember an impression?
I was very impressed with the things that they did. It was very different from any of the other choral music experiences I had had at that point.
Now, in this century in particular, it's a little bit harder to come by all-male choruses. I mean, there was a time back in the second half of the 19th century, mm-hmm. when men's singing societies were probably
right.
at their height, and the, the big choral festivals with the men singers. And we had a strong tradition here with the all-male German choruses that were
right.
here.
Yes, right.
Yeah, exactly. How is it different conducting, or maybe it isn't, mixed chorus, men and women, as opposed to all male voices?
Well, I enjoy both of them for different reasons. I think working with the Indianapolis Men's Chorus, there's also somewhat of a great deal of a social outlet as well as the musical aspect. I work with a lot of mixed choruses in my other work as well, and it's just a whole different kind of dynamic when you have the men and women together. And, of course, it's just the different voice types and things like that that also bring the variety of color and range to the whole choral experience
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm. In Masters in This Hall, which is coming up as your holiday concert in mid-December, more power to you. You're kind of ambitious here. Music, dinner, and entertainment, the whole kit and caboodle. Kind of like one of those medieval events where
yes.
we would invite you over to the castle and entertain you and
right.
feed you. And
right, exactly.
So how traditional are you going with the repertoire for this one?
We're keeping it in the neighborhood of the 15th and 16th centuries, and it's very broad. We're doing some English stuff, Spanish stuff by the composer Vittoria, and keeping it on the European side of things.
Now, refresh my memory. Isn't that an era with not a lot of vibrato? Isn't that pure,
somewhat, yes.
that pure white
That's
sound, they call it?
That is up for conjecture, but that is one approach. And,
yeah, how do we know?
We will,
no recordings,
yes,
right?
We will be incorporating some of that into some of the music that we'll be performing as well.
Is it hard to unlearn vibrato?
Well, it's one of those things that you kind of have to manipulate. It's a natural occurrence for most singers, and so in our rehearsal, I've had to do a lot of reminding to them that we're going to eliminate or reduce some of the vibrato in some of the singers' voices.
Hmm. That's kind of a fun challenge, too.
Yes, yes.
Do you have a favorite piece that's in this concert?
I think my favorite piece on this particular concert we'll be doing is the Vittoria O Manu Mysterium.
Hmm.
A motet, a Spanish composer motet. It's very difficult, but it's a staple of the choral repertoire.
Absolutely. And will there be some pieces that use, and I know this is one of your strengths as a conductor, just from seeing you work before, pieces that pull out solo voices or small ensemble voices with the choral background?
Yes, yes, there will be several pieces, actually, that will have some soloists. A lot of those pieces written at that time were based on, like, a refrain and then verses. So some of those verses will be done by the full chorus, and some of the verses will be done by soloists, and then back and forth with the refrains and things like that.
Well, are you trying to put people in costume for this
yes,
event?
Yes, we
oh,
will
really?
Have traditional costuming
cool.
as well.
Wow. Will there be a boar's head procession?
Yes, there will,
I
in fact.
I love it. I
yes,
love it.
Yes, there will.
And Rex, tell us about, I haven't been in Northwood Christian Church, which is where the Masters in the Hall concert series will take place. What is it like? Will there be, this will be in a multipurpose room, it won't be in the chapel.
That's correct. It'll
yeah.
be it'll be in the hall of the church, the lower area, 46th and Central. Mm-hmm. Northwood Christian is actually the new home of Indie Choruses, and we're thrilled to be there. They've been so helpful and cooperative, and the hall will be appropriately decorated, and as Alan has mentioned, costumes will prevail, and actually we are inviting, not requiring, but inviting the audience to also come in attire. It'll be a great fun evening and great food. And terrific music, and we're excited to move into the venue of Madrigal Dinners.
Lest anybody think they're going to be eating the boar's head that's part of the procession, can you tell us a little bit about the menu? Tempt us.
I'm going to defer to Alan on that.
Well, we'll be having roast pork, hence the boar's head processional, and green beans, salad, some kind of potatoes, bread, dessert. Will probably be date pudding or figgy pudding, something of that nature, traditional kind of stuff.
Sure.
And wassail, of course.
Of course.
And then we'll be offering coffee, tea, and water as other beverages.
Good hearty meal for a cold night.
Yes.
Yeah. And I know that as we're having this conversation, you're both very deep, you're like shoulder deep in arrangements for this concert, but this is your 20th anniversary season. What's coming up as we turn the calendar into the new year?
Well, in March, we'll be appearing with the Gateway Men's Chorus of St. Louis at Unity Church in the downtown area here. We'll be performing, in honor of our 20th season, a work entitled When We No Longer Touch, which was written in response to the AIDS crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And that will actually be done in combination with them. And there'll be soprano and baritone soloists involved, a small orchestra as well. And that's in March, at the end of March, on the 28th.
That piece in particular, that's become a big concert piece for the gala convention.
Yes,
hasn't it? Yeah.
It has.
It's a beautiful piece.
Yes, actually that's going to be on March 27th. At Unity Church. And then we will also be presenting a concert in conjunction with Pride, with the Pride Festival, on June 12th back at the Athenaeum, and it's entitled Queen. And yeah. Exactly.
Who would guess?
The premise of this event is that will be the first half of the concert is going to be dedicated to the queens of country, pop, and rock music. And
so like Crystal Gayle and
Dolly Parton,
Madonna,
make your list, yeah,
uh-huh.
And all those. And then the second half will be dedicated to the group Queen.
Oh, what a treat. And that's music. Okay, I have to ask, have you guys been watching Glee?
Yes, yes. Off and on when I catch
it.
I'm usually with the men's chorus when it's on, so I have to
tape
it.
In rehearsal. There you go.
But I do try to catch it whenever I can.
Well, they've been mixing it up, but they've done some fabulous arrangements of songs by the rock group Queen.
And, oh, yes.
And if it's been a while since you've hauled out your Queen albums, whether they're CD, MP3, or, yes, vinyl, refresh your memory, because there's some amazing harmony.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Very well-written stuff.
Do you how do you find the right balance of repertoire for a concert?
Well, I really try to find things that I feel like the men will enjoy preparing,
mm-hmm.
because I want the preparation cycle to be as much fun as it is work, and but also as much fun as it is to perform. You know, it's difficult sometimes when you choose music and you think, I know the chorus is going to love this, and sometimes they don't.
Sure.
And it takes forever for it to grow on them, and hence the omanium for the magical dinner has been very difficult to prepare, and at first they didn't like it. Now they do.
Do you keep having to say, trust me, trust
yes.
me, trust
yeah.
me?
I can, just wait till we get to the end. It'll be there.
I should interject that Alan has done a great job in finding that balance, and he's exactly right. The men are responding exceedingly well and have much more trust in the selection in this third season that Alan has been with
uh-huh.
us.
Yes.
Well, and it's hard because what doesn't come across just for your voice, but it is radio, you're young. I mean, you're not, are you 30 yet?
Maybe a few years above 30.
Oh, okay. But, you know, you're conducting a group of guys who range from, what, 20 to...
26 or 7 to 64,
yeah.
I believe,
yeah.
is the
yeah.
oldest.
And
yeah.
some and they're giving up their evenings for rehearsals, mm-hmm. and they're, you know, and while they're doing it on a volunteer and for the love of it basis, sometimes it's hard to get everybody rowing in the same direction.
Well, yes, it is. Yeah. It is. And I think that's typical of any kind of volunteer organization. But, you know, when I come up and face that kind of challenge, I just keep reminding myself that we're all there because we love the choral art form,
mm-hmm.
and that's the most important thing.
And it's also exciting to share with you that a number of the women from the Indianapolis Women's Chorus are joining us for
yes.
Masters in the Hall
uh-huh.
for the holiday concert. And they'll be performing in March, the 20th of March, with a concert production called Women Gone Wild.
I saw that. I'm intrigued by the title.
And it really focuses on women, historical women, that have had courage and made a difference in our society. So it's an exciting concert that Pam Blevins-Hinkle has designed for that March 20th.
She may not still have it on her car, but I think at one point, if Pam didn't have this bumper sticker, she should have. Well-behaved women never make history.
Indeed, that's
the
phrase.
I believe that
or
she
men
would
either,
have that,
I'm yeah. thinking.
Indeed.
I can see that.
As you know, Pam has been the director of the Indianapolis Women's Chorus for now 13 seasons and is also the executive director of Spirit in Place. And
right.
so we're just very, very honored to have her up as a part of our team.
Sharon Gamble with Rex Camp, board chair of Indy Choruses, and Alan Alder, conductor of the Indianapolis Men's Chorus. Masters in this Hall, which features the Indianapolis Men's Chorus, guests from the Indianapolis Women's Chorus, food, costumes, and more, takes place December 12th, 19th, and 20th at Northwood Christian Church, 4550 Central Avenue. Because the event includes dinner, advance reservations are required, and the organization requests that tickets be purchased by this Saturday, December 5th. Discounts are available for attending with a friend. Tickets and more information are available at indychoruses.org. Again, that's indychoruses, IndyChoruses.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Vaselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra, from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 when I chat with Poet Laureate Norbert Kraft.
I'll get a preview of the Indianapolis School of Ballet's Nutcracker, and of course we'll have our calendar of events we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter is made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by grants from the Arts Council of Indianapolis and from the City of Indianapolis, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.